for the most entertaining talk anywhere. Stay tuned to LA Talk Radio, your real talk station. Your free 24 hours of commercial-free programming.
Listening to Critical Mass with Rick Franzi and Doug Feller, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show. I'm Doug Feller. I'll be your host this afternoon. Since my partner Rick Franzi is still enjoying his well-earned vacation in Florida, this is our 23rd broadcast, and in response to the positive feedback that we've received, we're now broadcasting on both Monday and Tuesday afternoons at 4 p.m. here on latalkradio.com. So be sure to listen in or download the shows that you've missed by going to www.latalkradio.com/critical. Well, my partner Rick Franzi, did I mention he's still on vacation and I'm here doing all the work? Anyhow, he and I are business owners, just like many of you listening today, and we have been creating and facilitating CEO peer groups for 15 years here in Orange County, California, under the banner of Renaissance Executive Forums. These forums are the opportunity for business leaders to meet with like-minded executives and work on problems that are common to all business leaders today. You can find out more about that at www.executiveforums.com. Well, last year, Rick wrote the definitive book on CEO peer groups with the same title as this radio show, Critical Mass, and I would highly recommend that you add it to your reading list. You can find it, of course, on Amazon.com. Just put in Rick Franzi, R-I-C, Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I, under author, and it'll take you right to it. As for me, I'm a master certified coach by the International Coach Federation, the immediate past president of the Orange County chapter, and you can learn more about our coaching practice on our website, criticalmassforbusiness.com. That's criticalmassforbusiness.com. Well, each week we invite leading business leaders to join us on the air to discuss what's going on in their business. Much like our executive forums, our goal here is to learn best practices from leaders who are active in the trenches today facing the same issues that we're all dealing with. Today we have two great guests for you to listen to, Barry Goldstein of American Correctional Solutions and Gary Sahagan of Sensenetics. We're going to start off with Barry. Barry, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, Doug, and I do appreciate the opportunity.
Well, great. We were having a little technical difficulty, so if it gets touchy, Barry, just let me know. Don't worry. Let me just introduce Barry by saying that he has been with American Correctional Solutions, that's ACS to abbreviate it, since 1985 when he founded the firm with his then partner, Dr. Nathan Roth. They specialize in the field of on-site comprehensive correctional care in state, county, and federal facilities. Barry's physicians are working in all 33 of California's adult facilities, multiple county jails, as well as a number of youth facilities and Department of Mental Health hospitals. You can find out more information about Barry and ACS at www.correctionalsolutions.com. Barry, welcome to Critical Mass.
Well, thank you, Doug. I do, as I say, appreciate the opportunity, and I've listened to your program in the past, and appreciate being able to speak directly to you and your audience.
Well, it's our privilege. Let's get right off, Barry, by telling the audience a little bit about your path to ACS.
ACS was started, as you've said, 26 years ago with a partner of mine by the name of Nathan Roth, who was a retinal specialist, a physician, who had a practice in Pasadena and felt that he wanted to retire and write books and talk to inmates and felt that it would be a great source of material for books, and I tended to agree, and we both read and wrote quite a bit together, and so my first venture was to go to a prison, which I knew nothing about, out in Chino, CIM, Chino Institute for Men, and began talking to them about clinics. at that time, in those days, clinics were not something that was commonly done in correctional institutions. And the concept of correctional clinics in the institution, so inmates, patients are not moved from the institution, became something as our future business. And our first clinic started about 24 years ago in Chino, and we started doing ophthalmology and eye care at that institution. And it was a term of about a year until we understood the nuances of correctional health care, and we developed it from there.
Wow, that's an amazing story, Barry. So, look, tell us a little bit more about just exactly what does the firm do? I know it's changed quite a bit since you first started.
Well, Doug, we started with ophthalmology. Today we do many, many services, including radiology, dialysis, optometry, psychology, and psychiatry throughout the state. And, as you said, in jail institutions. Each institution is unique. And as we venture out, we decide what type of medical services, psychology, psychologists, mental health services the facility needs. You know, our goal is to work with the medical staff or administration and really do health, quality health in the institution. So our goal is not moving the inmate from the institution, that we feel that the patient, in this case the inmate, is better handled in the institution. It's a better environment for him, and it's a safer environment for the community around him. And over the years, we have developed the equipment for the institutions, working in what they call CTCs, which are correctional treatment centers in the institutions, and do bring in the physicians that are appropriate for the specialty. And over the years, it's proved to be very cost-effective, and that's also important in today's economy.
Absolutely. Barry, were you one of the first in this field? I mean, I had not really heard much about it before.
Well, Nathan Roth and myself saw the needs. There are other competitors of mine, which are really privatizers, Doug. They're an individual, a group that would come in, not in California, but in other places, to take over total health care for the institution. We're not a privatizer. We're a supplementer. We're going to go in and supply whatever the institution needs to improve inmate health care. In some cases, it may be radiology, where our positive findings are relayed back to the institution in 2 hours, where, you know, community standards are much looser. We find that correctional health care marches to a much higher beat, a much higher rate. We are much more aggressive in our health care. And over the years, our programs have been developed specifically for correctional institutions. Our doctors, our staff are correctionally oriented. You know, the protocol is different. Formularies are different, the type of medication, treatments, you know, referral base. It is a unique island unto itself.
Barry, that's just fascinating. Do I understand it right in that you're a supplement to what the prisons already have the capability to do in the way of health care?
That is correct. And today, you know, institutions historically have taken a beating from not quality health care, but I would say that in the past several years, the quality of health care, Doug, has improved significantly. The focus here is not only cost-effective, but, you know, health care in the community, you know, we've taken these and just tightened the standards as much as possible. I mean, our focus is quality. Our physicians are board-certified in most cases. Some of these are full-time positions for them. Sometimes they're part-time positions. But our psychologists, psychiatrists, mental health that do studies on recidivism and other studies are we consider to be the best. This is not a part-time, just local situation. This is really something they focus on. We have regional meetings. We're constantly training our people. And we're very prideful of the success rate that we've had with inmate healthcare. And also, Doug, it is changing significantly in the next, next few years as the electronic age starts to come to us. We have looked to do electronic transfer records, all HIPAA compliant, but now we're looking for, you know, the 21st century, and how do we take telemedicine and other electronic media into corrections, and that's what we're in the process of doing.
Fascinating, Barry.
Yeah.
So, Barry, if I can ask you, you know, outside just your unique niche that you serve, what are some of the key business lessons that you've learned that sort of apply across the board to any businesses?
Well, that's a great question, because I thought we were so unique for so long, but we have all the same problems that everybody else does. We have all the same legal problems. Although our environment is unique, we have insurance with malpractice problems, interfacing with the local community. Always interfacing with the local community medically is really the lessons that we've learned, that the expertise is available everywhere. And if you're going to have the continuum of care, you've got to step out. You've got to visit the local surgery centers and the local acute care facilities and work hand in hand with them. I think the lessons that the older generation, such as myself, has learned is technology has changed everything, and we're not an island unto ourselves at Pelican Bay or Susanville or any institutions, that there's lots of expertise and a lot of help everywhere in this country. And recently we started to open ourselves up and become more in tune with that, with what's happening via telemedicine and the Internet. And I think that's been a big change in our business.
Amazing. Okay. And as far as business environment and this economy, how has that really impacted you?
Well, I got to tell you, Doug, there as a business person, you look at, when times are, we say good and employment's good and the economy's moving forward, you do certain things that are appropriate for your business. But when things are difficult, you make other adjustments. I mean, I have found that our relationship with our bank, in this case CoAmerica, has been key to our growth. We cannot depend on some of the counties and the states to be up to date in their payment situation. I mean, you constantly read about the difficult positions that municipalities are in, and I consider that to be worse and worse and worse in the next year or two. But we developed early on some incredible relationships, as I said, with CoAmerica and also with Wells Fargo. And that's really helped us to survive. Some of our growth is because other small entities weren't able to survive. And in order to continue healthcare, we had to pick up where they left off. And I think that today, without a banking relationship and a steady base, it would be very, very, very difficult to survive. So what we look is, with healthcare issues today, which we see everywhere, we take advantage of this situation by bringing in doctors constantly. We're constantly reviewing resumes and constantly looking for new opportunities, because what's necessary in today's environment is just cost-effective. Whatever the care is, we believe that cost-effective is and good quality goes hand in hand. You know, it's the days of brick and mortar, of having a nice building with a facade and a nice secretary as you walk in the door, are gone. We take and we believe that, you know, our business is taken to Susanville, San Quentin, Folsom, or any of the facilities. That's where we practice. We don't need the brick and mortar. The large parking space with your name on it, those days are gone. You look at everything with the cost effectiveness in mind these days.
Okay. Kind of off the wall question here, but of course, top of the news in California this week is is the attempt to balance the budget. Any indication of whether that's going to have a big impact on your business?
You know, Doug, you know, I'm always a supporter, and since my business is in California, and I live in California, my family's in California, I'm always a a supporter of the state, and I hope they get themselves together. And but it really does not have much of an effect. We're healthcare; we do dialysis and other critical medical services, so we have survived. The problem is when you get in long term, and I'd always like to make suggestions to any business people dealing with state or federal or local institutions, is long-term agreements are difficult. The economy changes constantly. We're not sure what we're going to be dealing with inflation-wise a year or two down the road. And to get into 3- and 4-year agreements, unless you have some flexible cost of living, could be problematic. I see this is a real step forward, which occurred in the last day or so. And now we're it's like anything else. Do we have the money to fund it? We're stealing from Peter to pay Paul, and that's a difficult situation. Of course, I just deal with correctional institutions, but everywhere I look, everybody's having to tighten the belt, as we've had to tighten our belt also.
Yeah, that's pretty much true across the board, regardless of the business. So, Barry, what kind of things have you had to change as an example of the environment that you're dealing in?
I'm sorry, Doug, can you say that?
Okay, I'm sorry if I cut out. Yeah. Can you give me an example of how you've had to change some of your practices?
We have less support staff, Doug. I think that's, if I can say, less of the fluffs of business. We answer our own phones. The secretarial, the vehicles, the flights, first class, and things like that. I mean, we've had to adjust to the economy, as I'm sure we all have. I mean, we have a conference room that's set up for telemedicine. We're constantly with our staff and talking about training and trying to make ourselves in this environment unique. And I think that's really what's key. I think that, you know, here's an opportunity for businesses everywhere to stamp themselves with some uniqueness. And even in our industry, Doug, and I don't have a significant amount of competition, although I think that's a good thing, we strive to be unique and to improve as much as possible. But I think in this economy, the days of frills are just gone. And I don't think they're ever going to return, and I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing.
I would agree with you 100% there, Barry. You know, you mentioned as we were getting ready for this interview that you used to believe that what you do was unique and different from other businesses, and that, you know, that view's no longer exactly the way you believe. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, because we work in corrections, and that always raises eyebrows, behind the wire and so many other, TV programs have, kind of viewed as a very dangerous situation to work, which it is. You have to be aware, but people need health care everywhere. But along with that, we need the insurance. We need the banking. We need all the brokerage and all the other support that every business needs. And we never kind of looked at ourselves like that. We have a large recruiting staff. We have a H&R situation that we've never had before that we had to bring in-house. Suddenly, we got to a place where our growth had been were servers and the Internet telemedicine, telerecords became important, just like every other business. Now, today, communication is key. There's so much information out there. And I didn't think we were part of that, but to be honest about it, we are. And if we don't make the change like other businesses do, we're going to be left behind. And this is not driven by competition. This is driven by the economy. This is driven by not the goal of increasing our quality of service. We look to other people in ancillary businesses such as IT, internet businesses to help us improve. And I never saw that 2-3 years ago. Today I am completely dedicated into expertise, allowing us to grow, and I feel we'll continue like that.
You know, Barry, you use the term being open about your business. Can you explain what you mean about that?
Sorry, Doug, you're just a little... Can you say it again, Doug?
Okay. You made a statement about being open about your business. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, open is important. The fact that you can go to our website, see what we do, see the institutions we service, is important. Years ago, that wasn't necessary. You would never drive by and see our sign on the side of the road because we don't have a sign up. I mean, that's not who we are. We work in institutions. And that has, you know, negative connotations and positive connotations, but you know, today I think letting people know in your community that you do have a successful business, that you do have a growth curve, and we've grown significantly in the last 4 or 5 years, I think is important. I think we hear too much every day about negative this and poor this and this, and it's almost between our ears is where the economy is sinking. The reality is business people like ourselves have just got to pull ourselves readjust whatever the economy is. You got to expose yourself, talk to other business people like yourself, Doug. And in doing so, we share similar views and we share similar problems. Do I share similar problems with other services businesses? Absolutely. Are my needs similar? Absolutely. Is my employee base, even though it's in prisons, similar? Absolutely. So once you start to expose yourself to the business community, you find that everybody has similar problems and, more important, similar solutions. And I think that's what's important, is exposing yourself these days.
And you know, Barry, we see that every day in our executive forum businesses where we bring together business leaders in different businesses, and they are surprised to find out that while their businesses are very different, their problems are very much the same. So I agree with what you're saying there. What is it, Barry, that's going to drive the growth of your firm?
Doug, let me say that in talking to you and getting a better understanding of Critical Mass is very exciting. I didn't think there was a forum, and you're not asking me this question, but I think that it's necessary in this economy with businesses going the way we're going, the difficulties in financing and how do we turn, your forum is ever more important today than probably it was 5 years ago. The question
Barry, thank
was,
you very
is
much,
where,
I appreciate that. That's unsolicited, I appreciate
it. That's the truth. Now, where are we going to go from here, Doug? Is that the question?
Yeah. That's the question.
The question is we fully intend, and we have invested a significant amount of our future into technology. And prisons and medical services and technology don't normally go together. We see it completely differently. We're investing, the big dollars into the servers, the medical records storage and transfers, all the things that your major hospitals do, we're going to try to, and in the process of implementing in correctional institutions. So inmates move from place to place and they're released back in the community. We're going to strive to be health conscious. As the inmate comes into either the jail or the prison, we'll have electronic forms to be filled out so we know if they're diabetic, if they have other medical problems that we can deal with, glaucoma and stuff like this. So early on, we can start to follow the inmate and really try to deal with something that's not dealt with, and that's health issues instead of just dealing with the illness. You know, if we can do this out in our community, then we can do it in a cloistered environment like a prison. So our future is going to be invested electronically. Our doctors and our medical staff will review thousands of inmates from their office or surgery center. We think that this will help the quality, and most important, will help us to control cost. And I think it will significantly raise the quality of healthcare.
Barry, thank you very much. It's kind of encouraging to hear your dedication to healthcare, regardless really of who the patient is, which is what we're talking about here with your clients. Is there anything else?
I'm sorry, Doug.
Go ahead.
In our society, corrections is a part of our everyday life. And, you know, we all have families, and we all have children, and we all have aunts and uncles, and things sometimes go wrong, and you end up in a correctional situation. And this should not be a death sentence because of poor health care. You should not walk out with traumatized by substandard care. And the standards of care in the correctional institution should be every bit as good as community standards. It's a part of our existence. Corrections is a large part in California. We have 180,000 inmates in correctional institutions. That's a huge number. It's not a death sentence or a something to be feared. If you have a health problem and for some reason you need to be incarcerated, we've got to be part of the solution, and we're not part of the punishment.
Very well put, Barry. Very well put. I never thought of it that way. Thank you for making me think of it like that. Let me ask you, as we kind of wrap up here, is there anything else about you or your firm that we've not talked about today that you'd like to say?
No, I appreciate the opportunity. As I said, and don't mean to repeat, that we're like everybody else. We have the same fears and concerns about the future, but we find that you have to know your market today better than your competition. You have to, you have to run as hard as you can. You got to focus. It takes a little more time and energy than it did 2 years ago. Relationships with banks and other people in the community are more important than ever before. You really got to have your ears open and looking down those tracks. You have to constantly look for opportunities. And even in my business, which would be fairly focused in corrections, you never know. I see something in electronic medical records or some type of electronic device that's used at a major hospital, and I think of corrections. And that's it. You have to today not only be cost-effective, but you've got to put in extra effort. And with that little extra effort, I think makes you a winner and a survivor in a very, very difficult time, and you've got to reach out and help other people. And, I'm a volunteer with the Orange County Sheriff's Department. I've been a reserve. I'm a reserve captain with the department, so I volunteer my time. I think you've got to give back to the community. I think that's what it's all about.
Barry, thank you very much. How does someone get in touch with you or learn more about American Correctional Solutions?
We have Doug, I appreciate that also. We have a website, www.correctionalsolutions.com, or 877, and you'll like this, Doug, jail, J-A-I-L, doc, D-O-C.
You're right.
Well, somehow, Doug, you gotta bring a little humor into this.
We've got Gary Sahagan of Sensenetics with us this afternoon. Gary's been part of the family business, working with his father. The company started in 98. Gary's been full-time with the firm since 2003. Before that, he worked with Microsemi as a senior process engineer and is also somewhat of a serial entrepreneur and having started four different businesses over his career.
Doug, thank you and Rick for the opportunity to talk about Sensenetics.
We're glad to have you here. So let's just jump right into it. Gary, tell us a little bit about your path to Sensenetics.
Yeah. In order to tell you about my path to Sensenetics, I'd have to go back to my childhood. My father started the company, and he weaned me on what I call silicon wafers. We were very fortunate to have my father, Armin Sahagun, be an innovator in the semiconductor field. It was in the 50s when it was very early on that he discovered the power rectifier was something that we could apply to a lot of replacements to old tube technologies. So he got involved with power rectifiers, and I was busy and all through high school working as his supervisor, and I had a lot of my friends working for me, and just grew up learning the business by doing. After college, I went off and worked at various companies, including Hughes Aircraft, General Motors, Raytheon, and finally Microsemi. I came back to work with my father in 2003, and he was very intent on my brother and I taking over the business at that point, and we worked to do that. Fortunately, it came a little sooner than we thought when my father passed away of a heart attack about 3 years ago.
Okay. Not a happy story, but thank you for sharing it with us. And Gary, tell us a little bit about the firm and just what Sensenetics does.
Well, Sensenetics is building a following based on quality products and strong service in several product lines. Our legacy product line, which is still making silicon diodes for high-power protective applications, is still going strong. And we have a new product line, silicon-on-sapphire pressure transducers, which takes a pressure signal, mechanical signal, and converts it to a digital output. This was a patent that my father developed and eventually sold to Japanese partners. And it's about 20 years old, this technology, but it's still going strong, primarily because of its characteristically high impervious to abrasion, to temperature. It can survive high temperatures and still be very precise and accurate, long-term stability, and we also make submersible transducers. It's also chemically inert, so we're actually having applications where it's monitoring hydrofluoric acid and very, very wide open with a lot of the applications. We're still finding new things for it to do. The third product line we're doing here is something new. It's a new product for spectral analysis. And we're monitoring things like the chemical composition of a plastic melt. There's also applications we could even monitor exhaust of a car with this technology.
Quite a spread of product line there, Gary.
Yes, it is challenging, especially with the guru. My father no longer with us. My brother and I we have our hands full, but we have a lot of support and a lot of loyal, long-term employees that are experts at what they do.
And I want to talk about a little more about that in a couple of minutes, because you and I have chatted about it before. But before I get to that, let me ask you sort of our standard question. You know, regardless of the business you're in, what is sort of one of the major business lessons that you've learned that probably applies across a broad spectrum of industries?
Oh, yes, Doug. I think this could apply to almost anyone, but for me, I like to talk, but I've learned that that's not the key to success. Keep an open mind and listen, then stay real, real quiet and listen some more. Paying attention to those details and keeping an open mind really has been something I've learned is the key to success.
Well, you can sell me on that, because basically since I spend a large portion of my time as an executive coach, it's all about listening very carefully to other people. And as a business leader, unfortunately, those aren't always common traits. But I've observed you in action, and you are a great listener. So, Gary, tell me, what are you doing different with your clients these days?
Well, you know, the main difference that we seem to be having success with is listening to the customer and their problem. sometimes it's easy to say, well, that's not our problem. Our sensor wouldn't cause that issue for you. But what we found is that the customer is coming to us with a problem, and if we can help them solve it, it's going to build confidence and a following, which equates directly to a new sale or a continuing sale. And we find that that's the way to really garner confidence that we can solve problems for our customers, and we've been successful in doing that. One of the things that we did with a recent customer is he came to us and said, well, this sensor is causing us some false signals. Well, we opened our minds and said, let's find out what's going on with this. And after a few weeks of back and forth, we came to find out that they were having the same problem with our competitor's sensor. So we're able to illustrate that, hey, well, let's work on it together. And they, even though they have a similar sensor than ours, they went with us because we actually gave them that extra service. I think that's the key thing that we're doing now with our customers to help them solve problems, solve real problems for them. As part of my career as a manufacturing engineer with Hughes Aircraft and Raytheon, there was a lot of lessons learned. When things went wrong, we spent a long time trying to figure out how to prevent a reoccurrence. So I'm applying those same principles here with our customers, and we're finding opportunities to improve the product, improve the service, and just improve our customer service and problem-solving skills. So that directly equates to a loyal customer following.
And that's what it's all about. You know, Gary, let me ask you a question. You talked earlier about your longtime employees, and I know that's been one of the big strengths of the firm. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how you've managed to achieve that?
Well, I can't take all the credit for that, although my father was very good at handpicking employees and developing a sense of respect and teamwork among them. He was the one who taught me the importance of listening. I know I would go out there and try to, put my little magic touch on things, and he would grab me and say, listen, these guys know what they're doing. Why don't you listen to them? And it worked. I did respect and listen to them, and you know what? I learned a lot by doing that.
And that kind of communication has really fostered sort of an allegiance to the company through even some difficult times, I would guess.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not going to replace my father, but I'll tell you, it's just really nice to hear the employees say, hey, you reminded me of your dad, or hey, that's just like your father would do. That gives me a nice feeling that I'm on the right track.
But you know, one of the things that you and I chatted about is the fact that, you know, when you have a change in the key executive, there is an impact on the culture of the company. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, yes, I know my father was very much an inventor and a tinkerer, I would call him. He loved to just the discovery of something new and creating something new. He would spend till the wee hours of the morning sometimes at work or reading in bed even, but he just never stopped searching for the new next greatest thing. And it was always something that I know he never would give up on improving his product and his incessant search for new applications and new things. Sometimes let the business kind of wander. I'm a little bit more focused on trying to get the business and keep it profitable, keep the margins on track, and keep the customers coming back. So I'm a little more pragmatic where I'm not developing new products as much, but I'm hopefully improving the existing products to where they're I'm going to leave my mark that way.
Okay. You know, and that kind of takes us to the next thing, is that how are you really taking your technology into newer adjacent markets beyond what you've traditionally done?
Well, we have our legacy technology, which we always thought was going to be kind of a sunset technology, and we're finding out that not only is it having a rebirth and a resurgence, but, you know, with all the fancy display panels and electronics that are even on, let's say, a Deere tractor, we're finding out that our protective devices are more important now than ever. We can keep things protected from a lightning bolt if it strikes a tractor. It just diverts all that power to ground. So whether it's the hydraulics of the lifts or an external force, our protective devices are being used now not only in the auto and tractor industry, but we've had big display panels like the LED billboard signs, and also windmill generators are also needing some protection from their spurious signals. So there are some new opportunities there on that, and also on all the other two product lines, they're wide open. We continually are finding new applications, and people are coming to us because we're a little bit smaller and more nimble than the bigger guys. We have our own machine shop, our own electron beam welding, and we can customize housings that will fit just about anyone worldwide. So they do come to us for these hard-to-make customized problems.
You know, you shared with me, we were talking this morning about a fascinating application of your high-temperature sensors on a remote vehicle. Did you want to mention that?
Oh, yeah, we do have some exotic applications. They may not be the highest volume, but NASA came to us with an application for a remote-operated vehicle that's traveling around the volcano on the Big Island of Hawaii, Kilauea, and our sensors, there's an array of them because they can withstand high temperatures. We've recently got feedback from NASA that they're working great.
This is Doug Gefeller at Critical Mass. Be sure to tune in. Thank you very much for listening to us.
You're listening to Critical Mass with Rick